On 31702.
Well, on SMS, somebody says, Aubrey, was it not Jacob Zuma who appointed her, meaning Busisiwe Mkhwebane, the current public protector? This person continues, says, she is long, long captured. She was appointed by the Guptas. She does whatever Zuma says. Okay, fine. But you got to remember that Thuli Madonsela was also appointed by Jacob Zuma. So what do you say to that? It's 24 minutes after 9 o'clock. U.S. President Donald Trump has complained about China's trading practices since before he took office in 2016. The U.S. launched an investigation into Chinese trade policies in 2017. It imposed tariffs on billions of dollars worth of Chinese products last year, and Beijing retaliated in kind. After months of hostilities, both countries agreed to halt new trade tariffs in December to allow for talks. Beijing retaliated 3 days later with tariff hikes of 60 billion rands of U.S. goods. Some of the world's biggest footwear firms are urging Donald Trump to end the U.S. trade war with China, warning of a catastrophic effect on consumers. To give us an update and a better perspective, a better understanding of what's going on here, is U.S. foreign policy expert Brooks Spector. He's also associate editor at the Daily Maverick. And Brooks, it is always a pleasure talking to you. Appreciate your time, sir.
No, it's good to be with you again.
The U.S.-China trade war, just the naming, the labeling of this situation, puts all sorts of chills in my bones. Is it a war? And why is it being called a war?
Well, I mean, I think war is sloppy terminology. I've avoided calling it a war. I call it a conflict.
Yeah.
A war implies somehow that the tanks are lined up at the border.
Indeed,
and
yeah.
The engines are revving, and any moment now the invasion across the tundra will start. And I mean, trade continues. There are any number of products and any number of ships and any number of container loads of Chinese products heading to the U.S. and vice versa. And currency payments continue, and there are hundreds of American companies based or American companies with offices or plants or franchises or what have you throughout China.
Yeah.
There are some serious disagreements, but you don't see people shooting at each other, and you don't see people burning products in the street. I just think the phrase is overused and far too hyped. But that should not prevent us from seeing that there are real issues, and there are real disagreements, and there are some real possible repercussions that are not just bilateral but global, and I we'd be foolish to ignore any of that.
So this is really an idiot's guide to the U.S.-China trade war, Brooke. So excuse my dumb questions. So in amidst all of this conflict, these tours that are taking place, these so-called irresponsible tweets by the President of the United States, you saying to me there's trade going on between the two countries? So what's the problem?
Well, the problem is that there are disagreements about the terms of this trade.
Ah.
There are serious disagreements about predatory practices on the part of the Chinese. There are serious problems with the way Donald Trump has misperceived the nature of trade and the nature of trade relations. It's almost as if he wasn't paying attention in class when his lecturers were talking about advantage, simple advantage or comparative advantage, absolute advantage or comparative advantage in trade between two countries. And it's almost as if Donald Trump visualizes the world. There's a wall down the center of things, and the Chinese are throwing products at America, and America is throwing money at the Chinese. And unfortunately, as Donald Trump sees it, the Chinese are piling up a trade surplus at alarming rates, and it is entirely because of the way the Chinese carry out their trade practices. And although there are some serious issues with the way in which intellectual property is not protected in China, and there are some serious issues in the way business practices end up requiring American companies to bring on partial ownership or regulations concerning their management. And there are issues with the way in which China and the government, its state-run banks and businesses are used in ways which violate, it is argued, the rules of trade under the World Trade Organization, which China joined almost 20 years ago. That all of that's true, but at the same time, up until this recent unpleasantness, there were states in the U.S., Iowa, Nebraska, places like that in the Midwest, where the comparative advantage of American agriculture, corn and maize, soybeans, pork production, is so far beyond that of China that a place like Iowa has had more acres under tillage for soybeans, big, big product, right, going to China than being used in the United States. Just imagine that.
Yeah.
This crop, this vast crop of soybeans out of Iowa, and most of it's headed toward China.
So, Brooks, if I understand you correctly, the U.S., under Donald Trump, is accusing China of predatory commercial practices. And I'm hoping that you're going to list for me what that means, exactly what that means. I gathered from what you've just said now, it's the ignoring of certain intellectual property rights. I get a sense that somebody stole the patent of how to, I don't know, create a cell phone or whatever that comes from America. I don't know how that works, but you're saying that there are certain predatory practices by China. And you also point out that the U.S. is not innocent in that vein either, because they too are very, very robust in the way that they subsidize their farmers to the advantage of the United States at the expense of China. So what's the problem? I mean, this is business, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the soybean production, just to take that, you know, that rustic example, it's not heavily subsidized, number one, but number two, it's simply more efficient in America for a whole range of different reasons. It's not because of the innate superiority of American farmers. It's the climate and the way in which farming is carried out in the United States, and mechanization, and the whole kind of thing that would not be dissimilar to the way that agribusiness is carried out in this country.
Yeah.
And China, for the most part, cannot compete successfully at the same pricing level. Yes, billions and millions of hectares in China are used to raise soybeans, but then there are 1.5 billion people in China, and they all like soy. So it's a huge market.
Yeah.
Intellectual property, if you have a patented product that years of research have gone into, and if the country in which you are selling this product, there are firms that are busy reverse engineering it and picking it apart,
yeah,
so they duplicate the software and the mechanics and the intellectual property generally of the product, and then reverse engineer it so that you can make the same thing at a cheaper cost because you didn't have any research and development charges, and then proceed to build on that, that's not considered legal.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be considered legal in this country or in the U.S., and it wouldn't be, as far as I understand trade law, and it's a specialty unto itself, it would not be considered legal under the World Trade Organization or the World Intellectual Property Protection Agency, the name of which just now escapes me because it's late at night. Those are things that there have been persistent complaints for years. But we have to get down to the nub of this, that the Trump administration's understanding of China isn't entirely accurate. It isn't entirely accurate in the way in which it sees the Chinese state itself, and it's not entirely accurate in the way it sees Chinese government plans and objectives in building a richer, more prosperous nation for all of its citizens.
How so?
Well, I mean, the Chinese are good at plan, what is it, the China 2035 plan, I think it's called. You have an enormous amount of money that is being lent by state-run banks to companies to build the infrastructure, the housing, the consumer goods, the factories that make all this stuff, so that the Chinese lifestyle will increasingly emulate that of the West. But there's another layer that goes into all this that when we talk about trade conflict, people tend to leave it out. There's a geopolitical conflict that's also there that colors the way the Trump administration and probably Xi Jinping's administration, for that matter, sees the relationship between the two countries. There was a time where China was enormously inward-looking. It wasn't a dominant military power in any kind of way outside of its own country. It didn't project force out into other parts of the world. These things are different now. The Chinese military is getting stronger. They have advocated an assertive claim over a whole clutch of small islands in the South China Sea, which has traditionally and under international maritime law been seen as territory that's not under Chinese sovereignty. And there have been air base facilities and other military facilities built there, mostly by the Chinese. The Americans, in the meantime, have argued that this is still international waters. It's important because most of East Asia's trade, whether it's Korea or Japan or China or any of the other places, passes through that area on its way to Africa and Europe. To that extent, then, the Americans are arguing that this is an assertive push by China to control a large body of water, and it is part of the larger Chinese force projection into the Western Pacific.
Yeah.
Now, you know, that we're talking long-term stuff here, and we're talking strategic stuff, but that part of it also colors this relationship,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. We have a saying in the township, especially when we talk about products that come from China. I don't know whether it's an unfortunate sort of moniker for Chinese products. We call them Fong Kongs. And what that basically means is that they are usually reverse engineered products. They are usually not the original genuine item. And it appears to me that Fong Kong dimension is quite strong in this trade conflict, but you're saying that there are also other geopolitical issues that are at play here, but also the fact that Donald Trump may be a little tone deaf in his understanding of the way that China operates, the Chinese culture and their aspirations. How does this affect global economic activity? And more specifically, how does this affect us here in South Africa?
Yeah, well, I mean, you only have to watch the various stock exchange numbers on a daily basis to see the wild gyrations and the volatility of the numbers going up and down based on the latest Donald Trump tweet or the latest response from Chinese bureaucracy or the latest argument that a tariff of X percent will be imposed. You say one of those and the stock markets all drop. You say that there'll be a 90-day pause in the way in which Huawei is going to be treated. The stock markets all go up. Now, go back to your Hong Kong example. Part of the problem is that, you know, people are used to thinking of the cheap Chinese junk that you see at the China malls,
yeah,
for example. But I confess, I have a Huawei phone. the router, the router or router, how do you pronounce it?
Rock and roll, man, whatever you want, tomato, tomato, right?
Yeah, potato, yeah. That's made in China, in my house, partly because they're the world leader in making the silly things. There's nothing wrong with them. In fact, there seems to be everything right with it.
Sure.
There are a whole range of products that are, that are not, I was going to say perfectly good, but that are not only world-class, but are setting the world-class standard that come out of China.
Yeah.
A lot of the equipment that goes into the world 5G telecommunications systems that are on the horizon, don't have it here yet, but, someday. A lot of that gear comes out of China, and it is the gold standard for that kind of equipment.
So maybe China isn't that Hong Kong after all. If they are setting the pace, if they are the pace setters for products that are real groundbreakers, maybe that whole idea about China being the Hong Kong capital of the world is maybe outdated.
Well, it is in certain categories of products. It's the Chinese trains, the ultra fast trains. They are virtually as good as the models that are produced in Japan, or I gather the one that's in use in France. They're better than the trains that exist in the United States, to be honest with you. But the product range that comes out of China is astonishing. Everything from little tiny plastic, things that they hand to you in a department store when you buy a certain product this month that little children are desperate to have, the little cheap junky things, to your most current cell phone material.
Yeah.
But there's one fact we've left out in all this, in that it's not products made in America, boom, products made in China, boom. So many of the products that we're talking about are products where a part of it's made in the U.S., some of it's made in China. The software may be designed in the United States, but then some other app is partly designed in China. Even world-class Chinese electronics are still dependent on certain kinds of high-end integrated circuits, which is one reason why the attack on Huawei as a company struck such terror in the hearts of the Chinese, because if they can't get a hold of those parts of the thing, whatever those little bitty parts are that are really intensively designed, then the product that's any of their products can't get made.
How does this affect us here in South Africa, Brooks? I'm sorry, I'm running out of time.
No. That's important. Of course, is the market volatility. To the extent to which global trade slows down generally, you're an export-dependent country in its primary products, right?
Yeah.
It's stuff that you dig out of the ground, or it's stuff that you raise on farms. To the extent that global trade slows down generally, this country has trouble. To the extent that demand slows down in China because they can't build products to export to places like the U.S. because the markets have been prohibitively tariffed, is the extent to which forward book orders for stuff that comes out of the ground in this country is going to be hurt, and that's going to affect everything. To the extent to which your government bonds are seen as more speculative investments because the taxes are going down and because the economy is slowing down, that hurts us all in the pocketbook too.
Brooks Spector, thank you very much, as always, for giving us a better understanding of what seems to be a very convoluted development in the world, in world politics, in world economies. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
No, we need about another 5 hours. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Brooks Spector, U.S. foreign policy expert and associate editor at the Daily Maverick.